Rabosai, Lomdusha training. I have something for you today that's very, very important.
Does Rabbi have any pages just that I can write on?
Yeah, sure. I'll just rip out something from here. Thanks very much. Do you need a pen?
No, a pen I got. Thank you.
Okay, in case you need one, it's here. So Brisk has introduced into the Lomdusha jargon, into the terminology of Lomdus, something called a Chalushem. A Shem or a Chalushem. What does this term indicate? Why is it so prominent, so common? What does it mean? When should it be used? Now, the word, the phrase chaloshem could also be chalosdin. Those are identical. And the flip side is what you'd call in the language of Chazal, of Shas, maisa bi'alma, or hechitimtza. Okay? A maisa ba'alma is a phrase that's used to refer to some technical act. It's mechanical. It could be done, if you pardon the phrase, by a monkey. It's nothing that you would give the status of a chaloshem. Now, my first point is the simple meaning of chaloshem, or the most common meaning of chaloshem, requires the following. Identify an act or an object, and describe it. If it's physical, if it's tangible, if it exists in the simple reality as we perceive it, then classify it as a maisa bi'alma or a hechitimtza. But every act, even in this physical world, has a goal. So you look at the goal, you look at the act, and if the act is simply a method, a means to achieve that goal, call it a maisa bi'alma. Kamzel and Brisk, and says, look deeper. It's not a maisa bi'alma, it's a chaloshem. It's a halachic concept. It's legal. It's a status that has to be established. The act, the location, the object belongs not to the universe of science, of perceived reality with the five senses, but in addition and primarily to the universe of halacha as a unique legal system. That's called chaloshem. We'll start with example number one.
Just in the definition, the act and the goal.
So you look at an act. And it may be just scientific, it may exist in the natural universe, it may be a human action, but it achieves a goal. Again, all this sounds very abstract, but there's nothing beyond what meets the eye. A scientist or a human psychologist could explain exactly what he sees, what he perceives. He sees Reuven doing X in order to achieve Y. And that's understandable from the perspective of what I call the universe as we know it.
Right, and Brisk says that what?
Brisk says, look deeper. You may be able to discover that what you're looking at is more than just a hechitimtza. It's not just a means to an end, but that act itself, or that object, or that place, and again we're going to see that time period, is a chaloshem. What do I mean by chaloshem? It's got a status in a different universe. It belongs to a halachic system, a legal system. Okay, let's go example by example. My first example is a fruit. What's a fruit? So a scientist will offer his definition of a fruit as a particular category of vegetation. The botanist will study the fruit, distinguish it from, say, a flower or a vegetable. But once you have an established definition, that definition is absolute. Okay. Now, the key to discover a chaloshem is what I call the theory of relativity. This is the dead giveaway. Again, there'll be other dead giveaways, but the first, I think, and prime dead giveaway is relativity. For example, a fruit, is not just a scientific category. It's a chaloshem pri. And I prove that by applying the theory of relativity. Let me explain. If your definition is relative rather than absolute, then you know you can identify it as a halachic definition. It's a chaloshem pri. For example, we can study the shem pri as far as arla is concerned. And we may decide that Bosar, which is a certain stage in the development of the Pri, is not a Pri as far as Arla. You have to wait till Smadar, which is the next section. But then, when we come to Hilchos Trumas and Maisros, we're going to find that neither Bosar nor Smadar engenders a Chiyuv of Trumas and Maisros. But rather, you need what's called Havas Shlish. Okay? Havas Shlish will engender the same Pri as far as Trumas and Maisros is concerned, whereas Bosar will engender the same Pri as far as Arl is concerned. Then we move over to Birchas Hanenim. I want to recite a Borei Pri Ha'etz on a Pri Ha'etz, on a fruit. All of a sudden, I have a new definition of what the same Pri is. Or for example, in Cheskas Gimel Shonim, which means for 3 years, the Machzik achieved the fruits of the and the produce of this field, and he establishes his chazaka, all of a sudden we find a new definition of the same Pri. Once it leaves Shachas, that's the beginning of Ches Sabbatim, it's already enough to engender a chazaka. It has a shame pri. So the tool here is to ask the following question: what conditions must be necessary to fulfill to engender or generate a shame pri? If you come up with many different answers to that question, then you know what? You're not dealing with the scientific definition, you're dealing with what? A chaloshem. You're dealing with a halachic definition. Halachic definitions are always relative, whereas biological or scientific definitions are always absolute. Let me give you a second answer. Re'ias edus.
Just back on the first one. Yeah. When you say that, let's say for, they're giving an example, Smadar has a shame created by Orla.
Yes.
So what does that mean?
It means when the fruit develops smadar, again you have to look at the Rishon of what smadar looks like to identify it.
Right, so let's say it gets to that level.
That's called the shame pri. What you're doing is you're taking smadar, and instead of defining it as a botanist would, you're defining it halachically. That smadar engenders the shame pri. And then afkamina is that you're also ba'ala. That same exact smadar, as far as Trumas of Maestros is concerned, might not be considered a pri, because Hilchas Truma or Matnas Aniyim might engender its own definition
but
of shame pri.
But when we say shame, means that it now has a title.
Correct, a halachic legal title. Again, keep in mind, Laser, we haven't changed the physical world yet. In a few minutes, we could even change the physical universe. That's how far Chaloshev is going to go. Okay? Yeah. Okay? But right now, we're going step by step. What we're operating with is what I call the theory of relativity. The theory of relativity is proof positive, is your Simon Mufak, it's your indication, it's your Gili Milsa, that what you're operating with is a Chaloshev. Example number two. Re'ias Edus. What it means is, a person sees a reality, and he testifies. His goal in Re'iyah is to be able to testify. And therefore Re'iyah is an act which can be defined in the world of Heichi Timtza. If you follow that phrase, Heichi Timtza, I wanted to make you familiar with that, because again, in the Lundish jargon, you're going to see it all. Again, I don't know if Rapanis uses it, but I'm talking in the classical Yeshivish jargon. Heichi Timtza means, you know, you see the thing, and now you can come and testify. But halacha comes up with an entirely different definition of Re'ias Edus. It becomes, instead of just simply saying, well, the witness or X, that's a reality, that is actually true, he did see X. The law establishes what constitutes Re'iyah. It's a chaloshem. For example, Re'iyah fi Yisurim is fundamentally different than Re'iyah for Dini Mominus. Okay? Eidecha nem Visur. But even before we get to Eidecha, I want to show you something even more fundamental. For example, let's say I can determine a reality even though I only saw, let's call it X and Z, leaving out Y. I'll explain to you what I mean. In Isurim, if I see a chain of events missing one little piece in the middle, I can still testify. Not so in Dini Mominus. The Gemara in Sanhedrin establishes that if you see an ox and a camel, the ox is kicking up pebbles, that's called tzroros, and then you see a camel, a gomel, A minute later, dead, lying flat on its back with pebble wounds in it. Okay? You also have a second aide to join you. Can you testify? No. The same re'iyah in Iser Veheter would be chal as a re'iyah seidus. For example, let me give you an example. Let's say, for example, we have something called chalav akum. So what it means is that if the milking of the cow is done by a goy, I can't drink the milk. What if a Jew is yotzei v'nichnas? What's yotzei v'nichnas? He comes in, he sees the milking of the cow, goes out and comes in again from time to time. He's allowed to put the middle piece of the puzzle in place, meaning for that moment that he did not see the milking of the cow, he can testify that the milk that you're drinking is cow's milk. That's called Yotze V'nichnas. Wait, hold on, Yossi, before you ask your questions, I just want to show you that your definition and your standards of Re'iyah are relative and not absolute. Let me go further. There's another standard of Re'iyah as far as Dinei Nefashos are concerned. In order to put someone to death for a capital crime, it's not even enough that you see the act of murder. You have to see the act of murder together with someone else. Not only simultaneously, but as a group, as a pair. And therefore the Gemara in Makos Dav Vav establishes that Eidus Miuchedes, which is certainly sufficient in Dini Mominus. For example, in Dini Mominus, if I saw the Halva on Sunday, between Reuven and Shimon, and you saw the Halva on Monday, between Reuven and Shimon, we can be mitzarif the two witnesses, the Sugin Sanhedrin Daf Lamed Aleph. Again, it's very complicated, the Machlokas, Rav Yochanan ben Nuri and Chachamim, I believe. And we can, according to the halacha, we can combine the two edim to establish a re'ias edus l'chayev Reuven as Shimon, Reuven barred from Shimon. Such an edus would not be re'ias edus as far as Dinei Nefashos is concerned. And now the question is, what's re'ias edus in Kiddushin? For example, two witnesses see Reuven holding onto a ring, and they hear him say, Hareat Mekudeshesli to Leah. And then they blink. Literally blink, terrifying. And now Leah's holding on to the ring. Can they testify?
That was a pretty fast Nesina.
That split second was enough for the Nesina. She's holding out her hands, she blinks. Okay? So Rav Moshe Feinstein, in his Tshuva Zigris Moshe, has a whole discussion about this. And basically he's wondering what constitutes Re'ias Eidus as far as Kiddushin is concerned. Is it the same as Dini Isurim? Because basically you're creating an Isur Eishesish? Or should we elevate it to a different level of Eidus L'kiyum Adov, whatever it is in Ishus? And therefore, no, they have to see it like in Dini Nefashos, every single last detail. But Rabosai, again, using the tools for brisk, what is re'iyah in Eidus? Is it just a chetimtza? Is it just the ability? It's a historical reality that allows and facilitates the Eidim to come into Bezdin? No. It's a chalashem. And that chalashem Eidus has to be identified, has to be defined within the world of Allah. Yossi?
Just, I'm wondering, in terms of the...
Are you excited about this?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, Rabosai, I never gave this over in my life. And I, I'm really excited about it. Because these are tools. These are good tools. Yeah. I'm giving you good stuff. You'll see. You'll see after the examples. It's mamish.
I'm just confused right now. That's all. Just, like the Chol of Akum case. So if let's
the who?
The Chol of Akum.
Chol of Akum, yeah.
Does he need to see any sort of, milking? Or he could even see just the guy sitting there, or whoever's sitting there, without milking? And then he comes back and he sees...
I don't know. I don't know. He has to be present at the time of the milking, right, so that the guy knows he's there. Does the, do you need re'iyah of the milking or not? That's a sugya at the end of Masechet Avodah Zarah, the sugya of Kol Avakum.
This whole idea of a chalos shame edus, I guess.
Edus? In this case, re'iyah edus. Yeah.
So that's defined in each subject, how to get a chalos shame edus.
Correct. That's my point. You see, when we study tools, it's very interesting to try to find indicators. I think the greatest indicator, again, there are other indicators, that we're dealing with a Chal Hashem is relativity. If the definition of Re'iyah shifts from Zman Nokat, you know, from Zeroyim to Moed to Noshim to Nezikin, then you know you're dealing with the Chal Hashem. And that Chal Hashem has to be defined. And it's relative. Mm. It's not absolute. It's so different, fundamentally, from the physical world of reality as we know it. You know, in history, you could talk about different interpretations of what you see. But the sight itself is objective and it's absolute. Not so in Halacha. Halacha introduces the concept of Chal Hashem. And I submit to you, I could be wrong on this, that no one made this into a science until Reb Chaim Brisker came along. And I know that's a heavy claim, but go out, say, you know, puk tani livra, and tell me if you think I'm right. If I'm wrong, I'll be my dilemmas. But I really think this was Reb Chaim's contribution to convert learning into a science. But he never gave us the how to do it. Not that he relied on me to do that, but I'm just trying to push it along.
So, Rebbe doesn't think had the same data?
Again, they didn't give up. You know, I say like this. If I give you a meal, a five-course meal, but I fail to give you a fork, a knife, a spoon, you can eat the meal. But can I give you silverware? It's a whole. That's what Rebbe Chaim did to Lumdus. He gave us the silverware. He gave us the sprach, the terminology, the ability to cut up our food and eat it, shall we say, since it's Erev Pesach, b'derech eruv. That's what he gave us, as a Ben Chorin. You know.
Yes. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda explained it before, but what is it that once we see that it's relative, that the definition of what we're looking for varies from topic to topic, why does that become a Chal Hashem?
Because it means that you're not dealing with reality in the classical sense. You understand what I'm saying? You can ask an ophthalmologist what the power of sight is all about. But the answer you're going to get from that particular ophthalmologist has got to be objective. Otherwise, you want him operating on your eyes. You understand what I'm saying? But if that's what Re'iyah is for an ophthalmologist, that's not what Re'iyah is for a halachist. Unless it's just a hechadimsa. And believe me, don't be fooled. Shas is full of what do I call a mice of the alma. You know, many things that, you know, if the shor lifts up its left leg, you know, that's a mice of alma. I don't need it. Kriyas haksuva, for example, is a mice of the alma. Mm-hmm. There are no halachic strictures about reading the ksuva. You know what kriyas haksuva is? Again, I shouldn't say this publicly because they in America they consider it the number two kibbut. But if you offered me a brach under the chuppah, or a key, or Kriyas HaKsuva, blind, I would take the bracha a million times over. I don't care what they think in the tzibur. He got the third bracha. Yotzo, I have this very short bracha. Because, did I say the wrong thing? Say I'm not being politically correct. But Kriyas HaKsuva is nothing more than a hefsek. You know what I mean? If somebody would come in and stage, you know, a fake murder in the middle of between the brachas HaRishonis and the brachas HaShniyas, that would be Kriyas HaKsuva. There's no separate halach of Kriyas HaKsuva. Rav Shechter got into trouble once because.
Based on what Rebbe's saying, is the terminology Chol Hashem just another way of saying like halachic like status, halachic quality?
Right.
Is
the same halachic thing? Entity, halachic process, halachic object. We're going to soon see. That's why I want you to, if you can hold your horses, that sometimes Chol Hashem is going to transform the object in a metaphysical sense. It's not just a sprach. It's not just terminology to convey that we're dealing with a definition that's juridic, that has its own conditions and its own definitions. It goes way beyond that. It penetrates into the object or to time zones, into places, locations, and it transforms them. But that's already futuristic. I want to give you a number of more examples of what I call the blitz, you know, so that it really becomes second nature to you. That's the idea of tools for bris, to make it into second nature.
The only thing that confuses me is by the shame pri. When we were talking about a shame pri, we're saying that by our law, the boser makes it is kovei a shame pri, and the shame pri is kovei the isra arla.
And by truma, the havas shlish is koveya shame pri, and the shame pri is
engenders a chiyuv hafrosh or an isu tevo.
So my only question is why do you even need, maybe I'm just not alarmed then, but why do you even need the shame pri? Just say that by arla the it reaches a point of bosa, that's koveya this or arla, and by truma the havas shlish is koveya
the godless of the for the terminology shame pri is that it gives you a standard of comparison. In other words, I get up and I say, what's a shame pri? Let's say I want to know what yeshiva is. So there's yeshiva for Eretz Yisrael. There's yeshiva for a sukkah. There's yeshiva for engendering Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. And what else? I don't know, there are probably 15 other things. What I give you now are the tools to analyze shas. You see, we have a very small, myopic view. We see the Gemara right in front of us. I'll never forget, we were 3/4 of the way into the year in Gittin, and the Rav got so involved in this sugya, and he says to me, Berzon, bring me a Gemara Gittin. Really, for 3/4 of the year, we've been learning Gittin. There's a Gittin in front of you. You know what I'm saying? I didn't say it that way. But what I meant to say was the Rav didn't realize we were learning Gittin. For the Rav, Gittin is just... it's just the key to Shas. It's a Hechitim. Example number 3. Mecha. Mecha means the following. You're sitting on my property, squatting, as we call it in English, and I'm the genuine owner. Lamazon, right? I'm what's called a Barakam. I have to make a mecha. He's sitting on my land. What does it sound like, Rabosai? It's a Hechitim. This is my way of expressing protest. Nay.
It's not, because otherwise you would just be able to tell Adam, and then that would be considered a good time, because it's just a hechitimsa to tell him that you're not allowed to be here. So therefore I need a certain structure to the macha to say that you're not.
Who can tell Adam?
The machzik. Right.
Oh, so wait a minute. So what I think Avrami is saying, but you'll polish me up here, because I'm hoping this is what you're saying, right, is that mecha has to reach a certain standard so that the machzik heard the mecha.
Right. Okay. Right.
All right? That, I think, would not convince me that there's a chal shem mecha. But if you look in the Gemara in Bava Kama Lamites, which I would have in front of you, except that I can't get my laptop linked up to my printer. Then there's a machlokas in the Gemara to Tanoim whether or not you need befanof. Okay, do you need to give the mecha right in front of the machzik? 2 days. And even then the Gemara develops another machlokas. Even if you don't need befanof, do you need bifnei gimel, which the Gemara calls a gilui milsa, so the machzik will find out about the mecha? Or do we need bifnei shnayim, 2 eidim, just to establish and clarify that the marakama made the mecha? So the Rashbam explains, if you require gimel, then mecha is only effective if the machzik finds out about the mecha. But the halacha says that you don't need befanov, because bifnei shlosha substitutes for befanov, achieves the same identical goal, and guarantees with certainty that the machzik indeed found out about the mecha. That's called kol milsa de mesamri b'apei shlosha. However, according to the Man Diomar, who says bifnei shnayim, the Rashbam says something mind-boggling. Again, it would be in front of you if I would somehow solve my technical problems. But the Rashbam says that if before bifnei shnayim works, we don't care whether the machzik finds out about it. What you need is a chalushe ma'isa mecha, and bifnei shnayim that makes it into a ma'isa mecha. Then the Gemara discusses, what does the Marakam exactly have to say? Does he have to say, Lemochar et be'enu bedino, which means tomorrow I'm going to be toveh him to din? And the Rav in his Shirim in Ches Sabbatim said that the Gemara is vacillating about the Chal Hashem Mecha. How do we define Mecha? Again, the Rav doesn't use this language, he calls it a Chal Hashem. But I would say, how do we define Mecha as a legal act? And lemachat ben abedin means that it's as if the mecha is the beginning of the tviyas bezdin, the tviya in front of bezdin. Are you with me so far?
Is it the Rashbam by two? even though it's not for fun of,
he won't even find that. There's no Gili Milsa. So there's only two.
So, just in that specific case, why is that enough in the realm of Macha?
Again, so then you have to redefine Macha, that Macha is some sort of a legal act which allows the Marakama to express his indignity, his anger at the fact that someone's sitting on his karka. Whether or not the Machzik will find out about it is irrelevant, and we now have a new definition of Macha. But what I'm trying to convey to you is that we're not dealing with Macha in the physical universe, in the psychological universe, but rather in a pure legal universe. We're questioning what the function of a Macha is, and therefore what the conditions necessary for a Macha. So you might have one question whether Macha has to be befanav, another question whether a Gili Milsa is enough, a third question whether the Machzik Bechlal has to hear about the Macha, and a fourth question is whether the Macha is the beginning of the process of Tviyas Bezdin. All these issues are purely halachic issues that reflect the nature of Macha as a Chalushim. Number four. Let's talk about Cheftis. Okay, till now we've been talking mostly about actions. We spoke about Hagodas Edus. We spoke about Macha.
Okay.
Let's talk about a Cheftis. Just give me 1 minute. What is... The Rav introduces the concept of Chalushem as opposed to a Cheftis. Let me explain. The word Cheftis in the Rav's terminology, and I think it dates back to Reb Chaim, is a reality, what we call a hechatimtzum, a physical reality. The flip side of a chefta is a chalushev. Chalushev is a halachic reality. So therefore, the Rav wants to know, how do you define karka? Is karka what we call a chefta shol karka? Or is karka a chalushem karka? Okay, this will become clearer hopefully in a minute. There's a halacha called Ein Nishboin Ala Karkos. If the Taina Utfiya is on Karka, there's no Shvua on Karka. Karka is Mufka from Shvua. There's another halacha that Shibudim, let's say if I lend you money and you want to lean on my property, Shibudim Achal only on Karka. So again, just to give you the nutshell, the tip of the iceberg, the Rav said the following. That with regard to Shvua, it's the Chalushem Karka that's Mafkia Shvua. But with regard to Shibudim, it's the Cheftza Shal Karka that decides whether the Shibud will be Chal or not. What's he trying to explain? Eved. Supposing the Lova owns an Eved. Is that Eved Meshubad to the Malva? Or, let's flip it over to Shvua. Supposing you're Tovea me for two Avodim that belong to you, you claim. And I say I'm Modon one Eved, but I deny the other Eved. Do I have to take a Shvua's Modon B'mitzas on the other Eved? With regard to Eved, we have a principle called Eved Hukash Lekarka. Says the Rav. Eved Hukash Lekarka is only as far as a Chalushem Karka. The Eved has a Chalushem Karka by virtue of this principle of Eved Hukash Lekarka. But in Cheftza, the Eved is not a Cheftza Shel Karka. Says the Rav, with regard to Shibudim, where a Shibud is Chal on Karka, not on Metaltalin, the status of an Eved reflects a Cheftza Shel Karka. And since an Eved is not a Cheftza Shel Karka, but rather he's a Cheftza Shel Metaltalin, meaning when I, the Lova, give you, the Malva, a Shibud, I give to you on something that has Betichus. Betichus means you know where to get it. You know where to come to collect it. It's collectible. I know you can't take a piece of Karka and fly it off to somewhere else in the world. Karka is where it is. But an Eved, you can ship off the Eved. Says the Rav, true that Eved Hukash Lekarka, that's only as far as Karka B'Torah's what? Chalushem Karka. But as far as a Cheftza Shel Karka, an Eved is not a Cheftza Shel Karka. The Malva has no betichus that he'll be able to collect from the Eved. And therefore, says the Rav, there's no Shibudim on Avodim because Avodim have the same din as Metaltalin as far as Shibudim is concerned. However, with regard to Shvua, the principle of Ein Nishboin Al Karkos, an Eved has that same status as a karka, as karka, with regard to the Chal Shem karka. And if it has a Chal Shem karka, but in his, again, this is strange. You know, somebody from the outside would think I'm I don't know what I'm saying, right? But as someone who has a Lamdish ahead that is indoctrinated into the Sprach of Lamdish will understand, will appreciate that an Eved has a Chal Shem karka. And therefore, as far as Shmu is concerned, the determining factor is the Chal Shem karka. Eved, the Chal Shem karka expands to encompass even the Eved. Again, Eitan, do you see what's going on here? You're getting tools. You're getting the knife and the fork and the spoon. You don't have to take the soup and drink it out of the bowl. You've now got a spoon. This gives you beautiful methodologies to analyze the halacha in a deeper sense. Yeah.
The raya that we're saying that shibudim are on karka is judged by the chepta is because it doesn't transfer over to avadim. Because they, in a practical sense, you could pick them up.
You could pick them up, move them, hide them, lock them in a closet. So the evidence is gone before you blink. That doesn't generate betichus. It doesn't have a status of a chepta shel karka. For shibudim, we need a chepta shel karka. Beautiful, no? Again, I'm just giving you a tip of the iceberg. This is Malchus. Now here again, I need access to a sefer, which is called Ishim V'Shitot by Rav Zevin. Please make a note of it. That on page 52, he has a whole analysis of Malchus, based on Rav Chaim. And he says that Malchus is not 39 lashes. There's a Chal Shem Malchus. You need Umdana. There is Dinim, a Shliach Bezdin, for example, who kills the Nidon by giving him one extra Malka. He gives him 40 instead of 39, and he kills him b'shogeg. So he's parted from Golos. The question is whether or not that 40th lash has the status of a Chal Shem Malchus. Or, for example, Bechar L'Nachla means the father's firstborn. Isn't that a physical reality? Isn't that something biological that you can testify and determine that this child is the first child for this father? But yet, the Gemara establishes that if a Jew has children from a non-Jewish woman, then the first son that he has from a Jewish woman is called a Bechar. What does that indicate about the status of a Bechar and the categorization of a Bechar? It's halachic. It's a Chal Shem Bechar. Or, for example, the Gemara says the Suffolk Bechar at the time of his Leda, in fact, there was a Suffolk at the time of his Leda, is not a Bechar. He's not a Suffolk Bechar. He's not a Bechar at all. What happened to the reality check here that it's a Suffolk? Or, for example, there's a halacha that a Bechar's status is determined by the father. The father is neman to say, Zeb bini Bechari. Again, I'm combining 50 different sugyas here. But just to make the point, why? He's believed even against the chazaka. Normally, Eid Echad is not believed against the chazaka. According to one day, the father is believed against two Eidim. There's a kush of two Eidim. Ribbono Shalom. Two Eidim are telling you, they're Eidim Sheir, that he's not a Bechar. The father says he is a Bechar. He becomes a Bechar. And therefore, he inherits to Pishnayim. That's a din that's derived from Yakir. You see clearly that Bechar, Lenachla, is a Chalushem. And now we come a little closer to home. Chametz. What is chametz? Is it a physical reality? Is it something that you can ask a chemist to determine based on fermentation that it's a chametz? Well, the Ramban says, as far as bittel is concerned, the way the Rav understood it, is that bittel is mafkia the shem chametz. What do you mean bittel is mafkia the shem chametz? Has anything changed? Did I change the physical reality of the chametz? Ella what? There's a chal shem chametz. In fact, the Rav went on to develop that the Chal Shem Chametz could be relative to Bal Yerovai Motze, could be relative to Achila, could be relative to Yisar Noah, Chiv Kares, before Yom Tov, after Yom Tov. I mean, there are 50 million categories of how to define a Chal Shem Chametz. Okay. Next, a Shavosh in Ner Chanuk. This I find fascinating. Chaval that I couldn't print out the page for you. There's a tour. A beautiful tour about the status of a Shamash. What would you say about a Shamash? Is it a Chal Shem? A Shamash. What's a Shamash? You know, just take something and use it to light the Ner Chanukah. But yet, the tour has an entire discussion, and the Bach develops it, about whether a Shamash has to be designated as a Shamash. You have to designate it. If I don't have that page, I may have a summary of the tour. Let me just see if by chance and ability I could find that. Ah, Okay. I don't have it. Oh, anybody want to try to go to my office and print out a page? It's too late. The kids of the Bach. Again, the tour I don't have right now. You'll take a look. It's the tour at the end of Siman Tov Reish Ayin Gimel. And the Bach, also at Tov Reish Ayin Gimel, has a new din in Shamash. He says that even if the Ner Chanukah increases the illumination, the light, and you benefit from the Ner Chanukah, since you also at the same time benefit from the Shamash, it's mutter to benefit from the Ner Chanukah. Meaning, again, it depends. You need a Shamash that lit the other candles. But if you use the Shamash to light the other candles, then you could have Hanah, not just from the Shamash per se, but even from the other candles. Basically, he's saying that the Shamash has a status as being the source of the light of the other candles, and therefore, when you nana from the candles, it's considered as if you were nana from the Shamash. Do you follow? There's a tziruf here. The tziruf,
is that
even though in reality I'm being nana, let's say the Shamash gives 10% of the light and the Ner Chanukah gives me the other 90%, I can be nana in such a way that I need the other additional 90%. Why? Says the Bach, because since the Shamash was the designated candle that lit all the others, then my Hana is mitzuraf to the Ner Shamash, to the, again, what I call a Chal Shem Shamash.
Like the Shamash is elevated?
It's given a separate status.
I mean, so how? So
okay. Again, there may be dinim, what is the Shamash? You know, you can't just say, oh, this is my Shamash, you know. It's got to be, there are certain dinim, and that's what the Torah discusses, which I don't have in front of me.
So you don't have nine, but why then, if you light, are you lighting, you're not lighting any Ner Chanukahs, you just have nine Shamashes.
No, what I'm saying is I'm Yotzei Ner Chanukah, even Mahajan, Mahajan, Mina Mahajan. But the fact that I read a book or whatever I did, I illuminated my light and I did some sort of a professional act that needed light, as long as there was a Shabbish, even though the benefit was derived from the other candles, the Bach says it's mut. Another example, a kos. I got a kosher yayin. What is it? It's a kosher yayin. Oh boy, it's much more complicated than that. The Rambam Shita is that a koshel yayin, in order to be yotze, the mitzvah of kiddush, has to be yayin that has no dvash in it. Okay, it's called kanditon in the Lashon of Chazal. And there are many people who are makdid not to use grape juice and cooked wines, or different wines. It's based on the Rambam sheet, it's based on a hekesh between yayin lekidush and yayin lemizbeach, lenisuch al gavi mizbeach. Now, my first cup of four cups of wine on Leil HaSeder is yayin lekidush. But in Dalet Kosos Derech Cheirus, there is no requirement that excludes yayin she'eino roi l'nisach al gavi mizbeach. So kanditon is perfectly acceptable for the dalet kosos derech cheirus. So the Rav wants to know as follows. Bishleim, in the last three cups of wine, you could use kanditon, you could use yesh bo dvash, you could use yayin mevusho, you could use grape, just whatever you like. But the first cup, would, if you hold like the Rambam, or for those who are machmir like the Rambam, would it be okay, let the Mekadesh, who's being motzias in the midst of Kiddush on Leil HaPesach is no different than any Kiddush, let him have Yayin Shein Mevushal if he wants to drink dry wine. That's good enough for him. But I'm going to be Yotzei by hearing his Kiddush. I'm going to drink a cup of Yayin Kaditon, of grape juice. Derech Eirus. Do I have to suffer with dry wine? It's because he's machmir like the Rambam. So Pashtus, I would say, look, if you want to be machmir from the Rambator's Kiddush, you were yotze with his Kiddush. Ela watch, the Derech Eirus doesn't require Yayin Shein Bo Dvash. Says the Rav Nin, the mitzvah of Derech Eirus is to drink a kos in the first of the four that is a koshel Kiddush. Your kos that you have in front of you is not a koshel Kiddush, because you couldn't use it for the mitzvah of Kiddush, according to the Rambam Sheet. is memela, you can't drink it derech eruv. Do you see where, this is where we're getting a little bit, we're beginning to see where the Chal Hashem actually transforms the object itself. This kos, which is identical to your kos, right? Let's say the first kos is identical to the second kos. We'll call it Yayim Mevushal, correct? And I use the same company and the same kos. Everything is identical. Send it to the lab, there's no difference between the first kos and the second kos, right? The chemical results will come back identical. Well, what's the difference? In case number one, I recited Kiddush on the kos. In case number two, I did not. In kos number two, I should say, I did not. Two koses. One became a kosher Kiddush, and one cannot become a kosher Kiddush. One I could use for Derech Eruv, and the other I can't use Derech Eruv. Because Derech Eruv requires that first and foremost, you recite a brach on the kos, and you transform the kos itself, and it identifies itself with the brach.
That's only
to get
in the first cup?
It's only to get into the first cup. Maybe you can find nafkamidus in other kosos. I have it. I'm waiting for one, but I don't have one. Next. And this again is a very important tool.
Maybe there's an nafkamina by Birkas Amazon, third
kos? I don't know, ladies. I'll talk to you after she. Oh, okay. If you don't mind. I don't know. Birkas Amazon, I'm not ready for it. But let's talk about mezigas kos, since we're up. I'm talking about the Leil HaSeder. The Rambam, and this is such a great tool, the Rambam says, Seder Asiyas Mitzvahs HaLaila, the Leil Chamish Sarkachu. This is the word Seder. This is where it comes from. Perek Ches Milchus Chamun Tzumat HaLokal. Says the Rambam, B'tchila. What does B'tchila mean? See, you can read this and not even blink. Just keep reading. Why not? It's a novel, right? You just read. B'tchila, says the Rambam, mozgin kos l'chol echad v'echad. Zoktavov, mezigas hakos, is a kiyum in derech eruv. Otherwise, the Rambam wouldn't have told you, Seder asiyas halayla b'tchila mozgin kos. And by the Rambam is such a great tool for discovering what is a Chal Hashem. Or is it a Chal Hashem? Or is it just a technical act? If you would have asked me, I would have sworn on a stack of Bibles that mezigah is a technical act. You got to pour it. Or in Bnei Chazal, they used to dilute it. You know, otherwise I don't have yayin in my cup. So, but get a robot. Let him pour the cup. Nain says the Rambam. If you read the Rambam meticulously, mezigah is a cue in the derech eruv.
That's why someone else needs to pour for you.
That could also be, the Rambam doesn't say that, but there are those who are knowing that others should do the mezigah on your behalf, and that enhances the derech eruv. I had a shiur which I can't find, in which the Rav defined tibul as a Chal Hashem kiyum. The tibul itself has dinim to it. So that you'll find, again, I'm just giving you my remarkah for those who want to write it down, in Rabbi Adler's notes, Yossi Adler's notes, on Inyoni Pesachim, on Inyoni Pesach, pages 57 to 58, a summary of the Rav Shia that I think I heard myself, but I don't remember how the Rav developed Tibul as a Chal Hashem. I'll give you another couple of examples. The Rav has a beautiful piece in Hari Kedem. I once learned it with Eitan. I had the schus of learning with Eitan. About the Isur of Kol Adam Lo Yia Ba'ol Moed. There's an Isur at the time of the Haktoris Haktoris that no one be inside when the Kohen Gadol burns the Haktoris. And the Rav points out, again, there are a lot of Maram Akomus here, Sugis and Yuma Daf Mem Dalid, that the Isur that no one's allowed to be there with the Kohen applies to the Haktoris Haktoris the whole year long, not just on Yom Kippur. But yet, with regard to Yom Kippur, the pasuk says Lo Yibol Moed Bivolo Lechaper Bakodesh, and based on this halach, the Gemara in Zvach, based on the pasuk Bivolo, says that at the moment that the Kohen Gadol enters Lifnai VeLifnim, no one should be with him. And then there's a sugyan tamid, a mishnah tamid that says when he goes out, nobody should be there with him. And the Rav points out that with regard to Haktoris Haktoris on a daily basis, the whole year round, there is no such halacha. On the contrary, Misha Zocha Victorus, how you know till us a bezak, no snowy oa volukrovo, for you niklas evil a hechal. It means he allowed other people to enter into the hechal to time of that Torah Saktoris. And basically, the Rav develops a beautiful shiur here about the fact that Bia and Yitzia on Yom Kippur are part and parcel of the Avodas Yom HaKippur. And he's medayik in the Psukim in the Torah and in Sugyus and in the Rambams. Okay, again, just a tip of the iceberg in the Hari Kedem Chelik Aleph, pages Kuf Mem Vav to Zion. You know, that Bia and Yitzia is a Chal Hashem in the Avodas HaKtores on Yom HaKippur. Other examples, just I'm throwing out the blitzing miscellaneous examples. Hora, what's a Hora's Bezdin? You can look at Rav Shechter's notes to Masechta Sanhedrin on page 10. A whole discussion about what constitutes Hora's Bezdin. The Dayonim have to sit in a certain place. An Ilan, the Gemara in Chesk Sabbatim determines whether or not the Chazok on the Ilanos is a Chazok on the Karka. What constitutes an Ilan? Rav Khan's notes on Chesk Sabbatim, page 209. A Shara Muad. What's a Shara Muad? It just was Nogah three times? There's a Chal Hashem Shara Muad. This you'll find in Rav Shechter's notes to Bava Kama on page 4. You'll find also in Rav Khan's notes to Chesk Sabbatim at the very beginning of the Masechta. Esnan Zona. What's an Esnan Zona? Rabbi Chanan in Kovet Shiurim, Bava Kama, Daf Samach Heyamid Beis. A whole discussion. What's a Chal Hashem Esnan Zona? What's a Shem Ochel? What's called Ochlin?
Where's Rabbi
Chanan? Rabbi Chanan is in Bava Kama, Samach Heyamid Beis. Fascinating discussion about what constitutes an Esnan. A Shem Ochel, Rav Khan's notes to Psachim on page 18. And now, with the few minutes that we have remaining, I want to go on to a second meaning of shame. Shame is a transformation. It's a ripple effect. An act is done on an object or on a place, and in the mela, it has halachic implications. Because once that object received the action, the object itself is changed, is transformed. And again, on the page that I meant to give out today, Chidushei Reb Chaim HaLevi, Hilchus Mechira, Perek Chav Beis, Halacha Yud Zayin, regarding tztaka. Reb Chaim understands that Beficha Zu tztaka means that the most themselves change, they're transformed. There's a Chal Hashem Bechefta, it becomes tztaka. And only because of that Chal Hashem are you chayef to give it to the aniyim azocha. And so
yeah,
too.
You give it before. This is when is it?
As a result, I don't know if there's a time difference, but it's a cause and effect relation. Where Reb Chaim has nafkaminas galore. Or for example, Trumas and Maestras. The Maman Kahuna is a result of the Chal Hashem Truma and the Kedushas Truma. Or Hegdesh, for example. Your matfis Hashem Hegdesh in the Chefta, and the Mela, the Bilus of Hegdesh, is a result. The object actually is transformed into Hegdesh. And here's where the Rav had a Gevaldig Gechidish in Lulav HaGozel. The Rav wanted to suggest that Gzela changes the object into a Chefta HaNigza. The Lulav is transformed. Again, the Rav doesn't use this term, but it's a different Lulav. The heft of the lulav is such that now there's a chal shem psul of avera, of gzela, that's chal in the gufa shel hefta. And the mela, therefore, there's a psul for mitzvah on the mitzvah baba avera. And the Rav went on to say that an eved, he felt, could never become gozel. You could never change the status of the eved. Or for example, let's say I take a shofar or a lulav or matzah from one rishus to another on Shabbos in order to fulfill the mitzvah of tekiyah shofar. That's not, or lulav, that's not a mitzvah of avera, because the avera of hotzah doesn't change, doesn't transform the object. And matvis Hashem Avera on the Cheft itself. Again, this is gigantic. One of the Rav's famous yirim.
Why does a lulav? Why does it?
No, Gzela itself engenders a Chal Hashem Gozel in the Chefta. The new status as a Gozel. It's possible in Mizbeach. It has different dinim. That Chal Hashem Gozel engenders the psul of mitzvah of Avera. But if you steal something, but if you do another Avera, whatever that Avera might be, with an object, and you facilitate the ability to do a mitzvah by doing that Avera, that's not the psul of mitzvah of Avera, because no Avera is Chal in the Chefta. You know, you use the Avera You use the cheftet for hotzah, but that doesn't change, transform the cheftet itself. There's no chalashem hotzah in the cheftet that you took from one rishus to the other. Is memela, this is an unbelievable chiddush of the brisket derech. And I assume it's true for all of Lamdas. The brisk, they made it into a, as I say, a spoken, explicit science that the Chal Hashem transforms the object. In the case of a Gavra, a Chal Hashem the Gavra impacts on him, on he himself. It transforms the person. For example, Mila. What's Mila? Mila is the removal of the Arla. Fartik. That's a halachic definition. That's a mitzius. No? That, isn't that a reality? Nay. Mila engenders a Chal Shem Ben Bris. And that Chal Shem Ben Bris transforms the person. What do we need in order to change the status? You need a Chal Shem Arla. If there's no Arla, then there's no Chal Shem Ben Bris. And that's why the Brisker Rav answers the famous question, why didn't Avram Avinu, who was Mekayim Kol HaTarkula before it was given, why didn't he do Mila? He waited till the end of Parshas left the Chof of Mila. The answer is, says the Brisker Rav, because without the Tzivui on Mila, there was no Chal Shem Arla. And if there's no Chal Shem Arla, there was no Bris. You know, you're entering into a whole new world. There's a Chal Shem Besula and a Chal Shem Be'ula. And it could be relative. She changes her status as far as Ksuv is concerned, according to one day, even though she's a Mukas Eitz. She didn't have a Maisa Be'ila. But Linyan Kohen Gadol, she's still Ksheira Le Kohen Gadol, even though the Torah says she has to be a Besula for Kohen Gadol, because she never had a Maisa Be'ila. So what constitutes a Be'ula? There are halachic definitions. It's not totally in a Metzias. You can't send it to a gynecologist and he's going to tell you whether she's a Besula or not. And finally, this is for next time, a third meaning to Chal Hashem, is that a psychological reality, sometimes, it's very fooling to us, is really a Chal Hashem. And that's the famous Brisker Rav. I always use this as a prime example, that Stam Halva Shloshim Yom, people think it means a psychological analysis of the mindset of the Malva. He would never have lent you money unless he wanted to give it to you for a minimum of 30 days. But the Brisker Rav proves from the Rambam that it's Halach in Shemitah, that just like there's a Shemitah of Ksafim that is 7 years long, there's a Shemitah in Halva, a separate din, a Chal Hashem din of Shemitah as far as a Stam Halva, and that's Shloshim Yom. Again, that's food for thought for Mirtz Hashem next time. Right, thank you very much. I hope you got a lot out of it.
Maybe they're bringing Hasra.
Oh yeah, Hasra, right. Hasra, it's Chal Hashem of Hasra, right.
It's interesting, when the Rambam brings down Halach of Karbanos, of Gazel, like he doesn't only say that the carbon's not good, but he says, like he admonishes the person almost in this week's parsha. In this week's parsha, so I brought down. Anyway, so that's like another question as to why he needs to go ahead and really take the person apart. I mean, as we're saying, the chafetz is bad, but I mean, he goes to the next one. One other thing. So, like, Rebbe thinks that the Rishonim had this derech, and then it was just lost until Reb Chaim and he
not that
brought
it was lost,
back.
It wasn't explicit. It's implicit.
So Reb Chaim taught us
how to discover,
how to extract it,
how to extract it from the Rishonim.
It's like Rabbeinu Tam.
So they didn't
have
that.
The sugya. He wasn't learning Lamdash.
Yeah, but he didn't give us that terminology of Chal Hashem. You understand? Now, like I said to Eitan, I have the tools to analyze all of Shas.
So if Rabbeinu Tam saw, let's say, Shitas Rashi. So did he understand what Rashi was saying? Like,
right.
Lamdas?
Right. It was
he
all,
understood?
It was all what we call inherent. Now, that's not a good word. It was latent.
Okay.
Implicit. Latent. It was munach, but it wasn't lehedge. That's what Reb Chaim did. He took the Ar HaTorah, the life of the Torah.
He made it understandable.
And he made it accessible to us.
Okay.
That's my point. All right.
I was just talking to Reb Shurkin about this. About, like, I told him some people, like,
I wonder if Reb Shurkin would enjoy some of my especially when I quote the Ari Ken.
No, because he said, I asked him about, like, people giving a status of Reb Chaim as, like, a Rishon, and what happened. I asked, like, what happened between Reb Chaim and the Rishonim?
Correct.
So
that's fascinating question.
So he wanted to claim that there is still Lamdas in the Ketosis and the Nesivos. And Reb Chaim,
sure.
He really brought it to the next level.
Right.
And he gave a terminology and he really clarified
right.
a lot of the
other.
He
made it into a science system.
But it's hard to say that, like, there wasn't any Lamdas going on between.
No, chas v'chalil. I think in my introduction when I started this whole project, I'm pretty sure I emphasized that. We're not talking about something that didn't exist from the Torah itself. Uh-huh. On the contrary, what we're looking is to use the tools of the Torah. Uh-huh. What I didn't get a chance today to discuss with you is Rav Amiel.
Okay.
He's got, I don't know how many hundreds of pages on what he calls Metzius and Din. Uh-huh. I started reading it. I began to understand what the Rav once told me, that he didn't understand Reb Chaim. I never knew what the Rav was talking about until I read this piece. It's totally Chinese to me. After reading 20 pages, I finally came up with something, which I'd like to show you, that I think maybe I could make some sense out of. But he's come from a different world. A different world.
There was a guy from one of the Kol guys from Chavetz Chaim had a Harei Ketuv on their desk. So I was just asking him. I was like, oh, so I see you're learning Harei Ketuv. Are you learning in Yoni Haggadah? So he said, it's not mine, but I actually took a look at one of the pieces. And he's like a really great guy. He probably really knows how to learn. He's like, I don't know what he's talking about. It's a foreign language. And I was like, that's it. I was like, that's it. If you don't have the tools and you don't understand right. these categories, it just looks like you're coming from a different universe.
Well, maybe because for Baruch Bear's language is very, very, very heavy, very difficult. Because in the Chofetz Chaim, I know that they're influenced by the Baruch Bear. Okay, I better get that.